Hello, this is Bo, and thank you for joining us again for our continuing coverage of the Moontower Comedy Fest. I am here with Andy Kindler, Road Warrior, comic extraordinaire, longtime veteran, who has graciously sat down with us and agreed to talk. Andy, how are you doing?
Good. I think you mean old.
I tried to. The most gracious way of saying aged.
Yeah, elder. At least you didn't say elder statesman. I wouldn't have minded.
I really did make a list and agree. Well, what's least insulting of all of these?
Well, Mark Maron last night,
Speaking of insulting.
Laurie Kilmartin?
Yes.
So she saw the Mark Maron show and she said, oh, great job, Mark. Great job, James Dolan. Excellent effort, Andy. So then Mark Maron said, you know what? I think he's slipping a little. Don't tell anybody. So then I wrote today that I'm focusing on a little. Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
I'm at the top of my game.
I think so. I saw I caught your Thursday show. You were emceeing and
doing the speakeasy. That
yes,
was fun.
You're doing a great job of shepherding great folks. You know, Dana Gould, who always kills, and Jackie Cation.
He was so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, and I always love you and Slayton's patter is
Slayton,
always awesome.
I just was like when Slayton was playing. I like that Slayton plays to me.
I was actually sitting in the lobby waiting for you, and somebody I overheard one of the people sitting down there just like reading this tweet. It was like apparently Slayton was in the elevator trapped with some people and telling them how marriage was a nightmare.
That's great.
So, To the topic of being old, okay. having
why did you bring that topic?
Having politely been around for a while, you've kind of seen comedy. Like I take it, you kind of got started like, you know, either in the midst of or towards the end of the boom.
Yeah, like I started comedy in 84, and I was in a duo. But then in 86, I went out on my own, and then kind of like right when the comedy boom was in swing, maybe a couple of years into the boom. And so for like 1987 to 1992, I was on the road for like sometimes 40 weeks a year.
Jesus.
And then the boom, then it imploded.
Yeah.
And it imploded just about the same time that I wrote there was an issue of National Lampoon, and I wrote this thing called The Hack's Handbook.
The Hack's Handbook, yeah, which is if you are an aspiring comedian and you want to either A, learn what not to do, or B, you want to be a good comedian,
right.
or you want to be a bad comedian, you want to learn exactly what to do, this is this will teach you all the shitty, shitty fucking things shitty comedians do.
Well, it's also still on my website, which is andykindler.com, and it's under none of the above.
Right.
So you can read the actual, it was really incredible because... You know, incredibly great experience for me because a lot of my comedian friends.
if you had any left after they read it.
Oh no! Well, again, there's always. You know, I used to work Vegas. I never did well in Vegas. But when I worked in Vegas, I became fascinated with terrible comedy because my friends.
There's a lot of it there, especially at that point in time.
Yeah, I would see and I would see all these headshots of the people who were submitting work to play at the Riviera Hotel, and so they'd be just like, I just got fascinated with a. All bad entertainment. So like someone said they were like a Al B. Shore impersonator. And so I was like, well, how could you be sure it's Al B. Shore? You know? So I mean, I'll be sure. I'll take your word for it.
Oh, my God. you kind of are obligated to call yourself how can you be.
So the thing was, a lot of my friends, my friend is a great writer, but a comedian, Joel Madison, they all got, everybody contributed. And Chris Marcel and Sam Johnson were the editors at National Lampoon. They later went on to write sitcoms and stuff. And so it was like all these things where... things like everything is funny with an attitude,
yeah.
And then it's even funnier on steroids. so it's like steroids are just vitamins with an attitude.
I did. I used to do some music criticism, and it's like Depeche Mode meets Al B. Shore on steroids, and that was always the little zap at the end. And it's like, oh Jesus, you fucking hack,
right?
So. But having kind of been there at the, you know, what a lot of people consider to be the apex of the professional comedy scene, at least, you know, in terms of bringing in money.
Right.
to nowadays. And I, you know, I personally, I keep my ear to the ground somewhat, and there seems to have been like a renaissance in like the last couple of years, you know, kind
I
of
think
a,
so.
A mini explosion, especially with, you know, people with UCB, you know, people like Amy Poehler getting, you know, getting their own shows and bringing lots of people along with them to jump on.
Yeah.
Marin's a great example of someone who's been around forever and then all of a sudden,
right, took off,
know,
and,
like,
and, you know, and deservedly so. And in fact, I'm thrilled because I'm on the show the first season and I'm on the second season too.
I was going to ask if you were going to return.
It's coming out May 8th is the first.
Yeah, we actually, on our Original Gentleman podcast, we've talked about the first season of Marin. I'm a huge fan. I've been listening to What the Fuck since, you know.
It's like, the greatest. It is for anybody who loves comedy and loves the thing that's. I think it's interesting to anybody who listens, but especially comedians to hear the stories of other comedians and how they think and what they've gone through is just pretty incredible.
It's really a masterclass in not only, you know, pro tips for being a comedian, but man, if you're in my position and you ever interview people, it's a great bit too, because I think you know, Marin has a, you know, of course he has a style all his own, but he actually sits down and talks to people instead of just like, so what are you showing?
No, it's amazing. I think the best at that ever, in a way, you know, the best at bringing out people and it
helps that he's a neurotic mess. How bad are you going to look?
And the thing is that. But in general, though, I think that beyond beyond what's on TV, I think that there's never been a better time for stand-up comedy. Now everything goes through cycles, but like if you look at this festival, you've got so many great comedians, you know, Kurt Metzger and Rory Scovel and Brody Stevens and all these different, Maria Bamford,
yeah.
Jackie Cation, and all different. Like Jackie Cation is someone who I've known since the maybe the early 90s, and she was always funny, but like in the last couple of years, she's gone. I think it's almost because the crowds are able now to listen to. Because I always hated the idea of like a. You know, London, like in London clubs, where they go, oh, you know, take the piss out of us. You know, take the piss out
right.
of yourself, you know. It's like, I don't want to prove to people that I'm funny. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that's a ridiculous way to approach comedy, and I have no interest in it. You know, so the fact that, to me, comedy if you can't listen, then it's just someone telling you something.
I think there's, you know, in the American culture at this point anyway, I think there's kind of a newfound respect for storytelling. I mean, that's why you're getting stuff succeeding like The Moth on NPR. Is you know, people are not just interested, you know, in like, oh, tell me zingers, you know, keep them coming.
Right,
they can sit through a long form joke. Like Nick Thune,
Thursday. That was great.
He was one of the only guys who went up there and did long form, which you know, always a risk at something where you're only going to be up there for a small amount of time.
Yeah, and I think the thing is like, kind of my role in everything is to kind of comment on stuff. So, I mean, I'm not saying. It's a defined role. I'm not paid for it specifically. But, you know, like, I was listening to I think it was The Moth a couple of weeks back. And, you know, sometimes it's amazing, but sometimes it's like, you don't want to hear the person's story. So my comment was, why don't you and your story get a room? You know what I mean? Because to me, it's like anything that gets popular and that's good, not popular, but that gets, there's always almost, as it's getting to reach what it is, it almost has to be broken apart. So, like, sometimes those, you know, I was a judge on...
Last competition.
Right, and one of the Mike DiStefano...
Mike DiStefano, yeah.
Yeah, who unfortunately passed away.
Late lamented Mike DiStefano. He's a funny
guy.
Yeah,
he was hilarious, but he told an amazing, I think, Moth story.
Oh, sure.
You know? So...
Well, he, you know, he was HIV positive and then full-blown AIDS, and then passed away from the complications of the disease. So.
Yeah, and then hilarious.
Yeah. If you have an opportunity to go do the Mark Maron interview with DiStefano, it's well worth your time, because he's at a... He had a really amazing life.
And the thing is that, so like when you see someone that brilliant, but then there's this other thing of like, it's like on NPR, they have all these like, I'm writing down notes actually for my speech in Montreal as I'm talking.
Yeah, cool.
But those like the game shows on NPR, it's like, after a while, it's just too cutesy. Everyone's in the audience.
Sure.
Saying, wait, don't tell me. And everybody's primed to laugh. And so sometimes I think that, things need to get. So that's why I think things go in cycles. You know, sometimes like sketch comedy is it is great, and then you get tired of that, and then sometimes stand-up is great, then you get tired of that. But in general, that's a minor comment about a thing that's a great trend, which is that people are opened up to... We are, thank God, many years away from the stand-up comedy of the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever noticed this, and what's the deal with that situation, and have you ever... What's you know? So all that. So that, I think, is very... Great.
It might just be, you know, my own personal tack on things is that so many of us sit in front of screens for so many hours of the day that actually listening to a human voice talking to us is a refreshing thing at this point.
Absolutely. And just the fact that, you know, if you go back, everybody thinks, you know, we always think your time period is a unique time period, which it is. But, you know, it's like we always think of early comedy as being Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, but I'm sure there were so many other people that were, you know, Shecky Green and all these other people, and people we never even heard of, that was, there was a whole scene then, because I'm learning more and more that there were all these, like, places, you know, in my mind, I go, oh, comedy, stand-up comedy was invented, you know, in 1968 or whatever. But of course, yeah. It goes back to
It was at the Hungry Eye and Lenny Bruce did.
Yeah, it goes back to vaudeville and it goes back. So it's like, there's always, but I just can't think of a better time now. The other thing is just technology, in the sense that people can click, even at a club that's not necessarily even marketing well. They can still click on the comic who's there and see. Because I'm still amazed. I go to places and they don't know who they're seeing.
Do you... I know you've been on many podcasts. Do you do any podcasting yourself? Or?
No, I've thought about it. And I think
you seem to be kind of like the historian of comedy to an extent. And, I did want to hit a lot of people when you were saying about your Montreal speech. You do kind of the State of the Union comedy address in Montreal every year.
Yeah, it's the State of the Industry. It's the end of July. And I've been doing it since 96. So many, many years. And I just basically talk about what's wrong with stand-up and the entertainment industry. And you know,
why aren't you people fucking hiring me?
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, you know, burning... I definitely burn bridges. And it's like there's definitely a lot of downsides to it. But I have, as the years have progressed, the more it's a roast, the better it is than just... out and out anger, but sometimes I'm angry about things. Like, you know, like last year was all about Corolla, and you know, about the whole idea that people like Corolla claiming to hide their racism, their sexism, and all their views behind the guise of being a comic,
right?
Which is just nonsense. On the other hand, it's also I'm seeing. I don't like the other movement of
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like don't talk about it. He's like, for example, like there's no. I mean, Dave Attell is a genius. He's the greatest. So,
I love Dana Gould at the show.
Yes,
it's like you can tell a rape joke, but you've got to be funny.
Yes,
if you don't have that, then you're just an asshole making fun of rape.
Well, that's the thing, and the thing that was so brilliant about that thing was he said I think three things in a row.
He did rape, racism, and 9-1-1.
Yeah, he didn't get a chance to get to 9/11, but the thing is that because he was short on time, but the fact that he approached it that way, that's why you can't, you know, like when the whole cancel Colbert thing happened.
Sure.
It was so ridiculous.
I mean,
yes, it was out of context, but still it was Stephen Colbert's account. Not his account, but the show's account.
Yes,
yeah.
the intern they pay to...
I want to be clear that it wasn't his account, because he actually was, I'm sure, very upset about it, because they took the thing down. But really, people should have known people know who Colbert is. And the person starting that campaign just wanted to, I think, just wanted to get publicity for themselves, and just like, because you don't start a conversation.
I think I've read some interviews. She seems like an earnest young woman, but I do think that there was an element of, oh, well, this is something I can pounce on that people are going to...
Don't like where she was coming from. And the thing I also think is, like, obviously nobody should ever threaten anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just off, you know, it's like, that's not acceptable to... But, you know, a lot of times people will then say that, like, oh, my point is good because look at how people are reacting. No, your point still was wrong. You don't start a conversation with cancel Colbert.
Yeah.
You just don't. If you do, you're telling me that you're just trying to get publicity for yourself.
Exactly.
I don't know enough about her, really.
You know, she, like I said, I think she's very earnest, as, you know, someone who wants civil rights for everyone. everybody. You know, I
yeah, but
I kind
she
of
says
disagree.
White people. But she says white people can't understand.
Yeah,
and that's ridiculous. You know, I'm Jewish. I think I know something about oppression. I certainly wouldn't say that I've been oppressed like an African American person in this country because
sure.
I can hide it. And I grew up in Queens, so it's like
right.
Yeah, but this idea that you can't I can understand that Stephen Colbert is a genius comedian.
Yeah,
which he is.
And if there's no, you know, if you can't, you know, if there's no space for empathy, well, then what's the fucking point? I mean,
right.
going against the
wrong target, going against someone
sure.
who, because that's the other thing. It happened with Patton Oswalt in
with Slate, yeah.
Salon, it was.
Oh, Salon, that's
yeah.
right.
And it was like he had a perfect joke, which was like the San Francisco television station that messed up. Someone pranked them, and they said the wrong names of the pilots.
Yeah, and then he said they hired something wrong.
We So Solid.
We So Solid, yeah.
Which is a perfect joke.
Yeah.
When you get these people at Salon, they don't, and what they don't understand is you have to understand who you're going after.
Sure.
Patton Oswalt, see, these are the top of comedy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Context is everything. You know, like I'm a big Lenny Bruce fan. And but I never play him for anybody because I know a lot about what happened in the 60s and I know the cultural reference. And, you know, maybe now after 8 seasons of Mad Men, people would get them. You have to have a certain grounding, you know, for that material to be funny. You know, and certainly when it comes to broader stuff, you have to consider the source.
Well, of course, like Lenny Bruce, he wasn't like saying, I want to use the N-word. I want those words to be out there. That was just a brilliantly crafted bit.
That's his bit. And I remember getting upset like way back in the day, back when they still had bookstores and Barnes & Noble was around. They used to have all these T-shirts with cultural figures on them. And the one they had of Lenny was all of the like, you know,
which he very rarely used.
Yeah.
Like, being like,
he was wearing a T-shirt and it had all the like cuss word
I remember
bullshit
that.
Coming out of his mouth. And I was like, you know, this isn't some potty mouth guy. He's very erudite, you know.
He was actually
jazz
clean,
listening.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
He just focused in on certain words.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was like, he's Mort Saul. He says fuck occasionally.
Exactly.
You know. So anyway, I do want to give you. Speaking of being a bad hacky guy. So what have you been doing lately? What's the new project? Do you have anything coming up?
The new project now is. I'm glad you asked that. A lot of people, even with the elaborate pre-interview. What's happening now is my friend Ed Krasnick was a hilarious comedian. He always starts out a sentence with no. What I'm doing now is I'm on the second year of Marim, which starts May 8th, but I also have come out with a CD. I had a DVD, which I self-produced, I did it self-produced. And my wife directed it, who's a really brilliant photographer,
nice.
and her name is Susan Malgin, but she's very shy. And we did, and it was the only thing I've ever done ourselves, and we released it as a DVD. And then I recorded a CD in last winter. And it's coming out. It's called Hence the Humor. And it's available on CD. It's also available on vinyl if for those people who don't want to listen to it.
That I think that sums up your style better.
It's not really on vinyl, but I just think it's funny that people... Like that people. First of all,
Have you been to an Urban Outfitters lately? They actually have a vinyl section in there. What?
Well, as a music guy, you know that like... the frequency range of stand-up, I don't know, necessarily is enhanced by vinyl.
Exactly. I need the hi-fi version. Do you have the high-fidelity vinyl?
I'm not getting Andy's annoying voice clear enough.
Can you pitch that up a little?
Exactly.
I'm not really getting the shrill and the treble. and the name of the old... The older.
I Wish I Was Better?
I Wish I Was Better.
Yeah, so. which was so funny because somebody from the LA Weekly, they said they liked the DVD, but that it was grammatically incorrect because it should be I Wish I Were Bitter. So I went through like 2 years of like agony. And then other people said, you know what? It's not really that wrong.
I don't think you want to attract the audience that's going to notice that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like people criticizing people's spelling on... Twitter. I think it's
it gets rude. Yeah. At some point, you just have to slap yourself down and go, that might annoy you personally, but shut the fuck up.
They could also be dyslexic. A lot of people dyslexic.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And no, a lot of people are so dyslexic, absolutely. Even spell check won't help them.
Yes, and it's just like, you know, hey, they're writing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better than a lot of people out there. You have your own Twitter feed.
Yes, my Twitter feed is at Andy Kindler, and very excited about it getting verified. So if you don't like it, just remember it's verified. Somebody has verified it. This is not a fake.
It's been rubber stamped by Twitter itself.
Yeah, except no imitations. And that's really where you'll get most of the information and rage that I. If you're interested in information about where I'm playing. And how, like today I read about Walmart and their charter schools. So I'm going to try and restrain myself from turning my Twitter feed into a
bitter, hate-filled rant.
Evil Walmart rant. So, but that's basically it. I also have, Twitter goes to my Facebook, but I find Facebook very annoying, but a lot of my friends are still there.
So I'm the opposite way. I think it's all just functionality.
Like the 140 characters.
No, it's not that. As a matter of fact, I write for the video games industry, and like the little blocks of text that I get for my characters has to be 144. So I'm actually have the natural aptitude for Twitter. I just like, do I have to go to the Twitter site? To how do I do this? I immediately turn into an 80-year-old man talking to his grandson. It's like, wait, is it inside? Is it in the computer?
Well, Facebook, I'm annoyed at for just a very simple reason. It's like, when I start, if you're a comedian and you want to promote, you know, you're going to eventually get over 5,000 people. You know, it's not like dragging, but so the fact that they limit it, it's just ridiculous.
No, I do the fan page,
right?
Thing,
but then I have to go through a whole thing now where I have to transfer.
No, we're the same way. It's just why won't you make it easy for me to just put it in one place?
Well, they do. Every day, Facebook says, take our new tour. I don't have time to take your tour.
Exactly.
Yeah, every day, it's like, look what's new. Why don't you have something that's not new?
Just make it work. You know, you finally got it to the point where I can post photos. So you're up to live journal speed at 2001. Congratulations.
Exactly. Now, one thing I also do want to mention, I'll be on The Late Show with David Letterman May 16th.
Oh, very good. So, right on. So you're going to be one of the last guys on there.
Oh,
I guess, I guess he's got about like 6 more months after that.
I don't think he's ending it right at the beginning of 250.
No,
I'm hoping he goes all of it. He's really my hero. And,
really,
And but you know what? He's my hero, and not embarrassing, but how much I love him is just amazing.
When was your first time on the show?
1996, I wasn't on for 4 years, and when I came on the next time, I said, you know what? I was here in 96. I'm here now. I can't live on this kind of thing. But then he started using me, all because of him. He used me for field pieces and all these things. So it became really a dream come true in my life. And but I think that he's leaving when he wants to leave.
Yep.
And the fact that he's doing a transition the way it should have worked when the Tonight Show, the way Johnny Carson wanted Letterman and Leno had no business being a talk show host. Now the fact that Colbert, he wanted the job, but he also said, I won't do it without Dave's blessing. Dave's given him the blessing.
Yeah.
The universe has finally righted itself.
It's nice to see the respect. And it's also nice to know that the people who write shitty books about such stuff will not have anything to write a shitty book about.
I know where you're going with
it. A little bit. Just a little bit. I don't have to sit through the miniseries. That's all I do. All right. Well, that seems like a good place to let off. I thank you for sitting down with us. Thank you for such a great time on Thursday, by the way. I love the show.
And thank you. Sorry, I'm going to write a book. I'm 6 minutes late.
Hey, I'd rather you be late than me. So
nice talking to you, though.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. We're shaking hands on the radio internet.
Right above it.